What will you do when they catch you? What will you do if they break you? If you continue to fight, what will you become?
What will they do when they catch you? What will they do when they break you?
Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
Welcome to the Idle Red Hands. I'm Lyle.
I'm Alan.
I'm Jeremy.
And another Star Wars theme episode. But the big news today was they revealed the title of Episode 8. The Last Jedi. So you had an interesting point, Alan, about grammar, of all things.
Well, it has come up that Jedi is both singular and plural. Someone made a comment that if it was plural, they would say the last of the Jedi, rather than the last Jedi.
Not necessarily. But I guess the question is, either who is the last Jedi or who are the last Jedi? So just based on those three words, who is or who are the last Jedi? What do you think Episode 8 is going to be about?
I think it's going to focus on Luke pretty heavily. Him passing because he kind of failed with Han and Leia's son. It'll be a lot about that failure and him trying to pass the light side on to someone else.
You wanted to say torch, didn't you? You were going to say pass the torch, and you realize it's really pass the lightsaber.
Yeah, it's pass the lightsaber.
Funny, though, if he has no lines in this movie, too? Right. Like, everything is done in between the movies, and he's on his deathbed.
Well, actually, I kind of
thought... And he just dies. He just passes away, and like Mark Hamill's like, whoa, I'm not the one that died.
I kind of thought that they actually showed a little bit of a teaser where, like, the first shot was, like, the last shot of the previous movie, so... It might not be true, but, you know, all the other movies had a bit of time between them,
Right.
Especially between, like, Empire and Jedi. You could even say between 3 and 4, there's a lot of time. Between 6 and 7, there's, what, like 30 years between them? Is this going to be the only Star Wars that kind of picks up instantly where the last one left off? Or is it going to be, like, 3 to 6 years later?
I think that's such an important moment in the narrative that they may have to do that, because if you're skipping their first interaction, that would be difficult.
They might do that in flashbacks. I don't know. I think that there is a case where they could have some time because the New Order is a little bit in shambles. Mm-hmm. So they've got to collect themselves. So they could skip some of the training. So maybe, a lot of people commented how Luke's training was very truncated. It was like, what was that, 48 hours or something like that?
Right.
He's like the Jack Bauer of Jedi, like 24 hours. It's going to be the longest day of my life, but I'll be a Jedi at the end. So what they might do is have some of the training in between the movie and then the kind of finishing up at the end with maybe some flashbacks. Mark Hamill's posted a teaser picture, jokingly, of him carrying Rey on his back.
I was just going to say that. I want to see it the other way around, though. I want to see him on Rey's back.
So,
no, he is on Rey's back. I think that was the picture. Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
that's what
it goes. Just a hint, what it is. So there should be some there.
I was thinking, like, his training with Yoda. I mean, we automatically assume that he did not go back to see Yoda between Empire and Jedi.
Well, he asks Yoda the question about Vader being his father in Jedi, I'm going to assume that he didn't go back,
right,
do some more training.
And then
he's like, there's something I wanted to ask you. Yeah, he's like, do you remember? No. Sorry. Yeah. No. Wait a minute. So it seems to be like, he did other things. I don't know why he wouldn't go straight back to Dagobah. Maybe he was very busy with the Rebel stuff.
Also, this isn't really mentioned in the original Star Wars because it wasn't thought of before, but through the Clone Wars, I've seen how they make lightsabers, how they get their crystals and how they prepare the Kyber crystals. Yeah, the Kyber crystals. That's kind of part of their training, and even Darth Vader eventually, he does make mention of Luke's new lightsaber. So
yeah, no, I noticed that in the Clone Wars, where they do kind of a big deal.
And in the MMO, Knights of the Old Republic, that's a big mission, is going to find your crystal and what color it is and everything.
Ooh. Yeah. I gotta finish that game. Now that we've learned that it's canon, another big news that Knights of the Old Republic is canon.
Supposedly the news is that Rebels is using the Knights of the Old Republic as lore, so therefore it's kind of official that it's going to be canon.
But what about The Last Jedi?
Well, back to that, yeah. So I have my theories. There's the whole, everyone thinks about Rey or Luke being The Last Jedi, but what if something is like just the age of the Jedi Order has come to a pass. It's like the last samurai or the last starfighter.
I was thinking something similar, and I don't think they're going to do it, is that they figure out that what is fairly explicit in the prequels is that Anakin brings balance to the Force, and he brings balance by killing all the Jedi except for two, because there's now two Sith. Right. So the Jedi realize that balance to the Force means that there will always have to be the Sith. So in order to eliminate the Sith, we have to eliminate the Jedi.
Yeah.
So they make a conscious decision to sort of end the Jedi Order. But I don't think that is going to happen, because you don't spend billions at $4 billion to buy a franchise and then kill one of the most attractive parts of it.
No, but more. There's also, but the Jedi Order might come to an end, and now there's the New Order.
Who's the bad guy? We got the New Order and the New Order.
They have different logos.
Well, I'm saying they're going to be the New Order. Like, they're the new good guys.
So they're going to take the name and the Nazi paraphernalia. Yeah. Hey, we're the good guys. Yeah.
Well, I think that choice and kind of making Luke the gatekeeper of whether the Jedi tradition continues, whether he trains Rey or not, is interesting for that character. You know, because his failure with Kylo Ren... Mm-hmm. Making that, no, I refuse to train you. This isn't going to happen. The same way that, you know, Luke kind of had the battle with Yoda. You know, he's too young. He can't, you know, I'm not training him. Forget it. He's no good. His failure being the basis, him making that decision. And so he decides, I will be the last. I'm going down as the last Jedi. I'm not passing this on to you, you know, for whatever reason. And he may know more about her than we do, so.
And it could be that's what he decides to do. And then things happen. Mm-hmm. And he realizes, well, I can't make that decision. There's a YouTuber that I recently started watching called John Solo, and he talks about Star Wars, and he had this, he posted this theory that stormtroopers can't shoot, and there was the one theory is they were, you know, on the Death Star, they deliberately tried not to hit them because they were going to have the tracking device lead them to where the rebels were, and he's tying it into Rogue One, which we'll be talking about later in this episode, that the Force is actually trying to protect the balance. The Force needed Luke to escape so he can reestablish the Jedi Order and things like that. So it was kind of interesting. So taking that idea where the Force is manipulating things so it can always have balance, it can always have the Sith, it can always have a Jedi Order, Luke can try to quit, but the Force will compel him, or the Force will manipulate events, which happen regardless of what his decision is. Something's going to happen, or the Jedi will always be there, because we always need the Jedi, because you're always going to have the Sith. I've heard that episode 8 isn't going to be dark like Empire Strikes Back was, but it was going to be more adventure-y.
What I found is kind of interesting, though, is that Luke's position and Kylo Ren's position, it's kind of very similar to Obi-Wan and Anakin as Darth Vader, and they'll probably have a very similar meetup.
Sacrifices himself and he'll be a ghost in the third movie?
Probably. You know, they seem to be running that track already, so yeah. It's almost, some kind of twist, maybe. Maybe he'll kill Kylo Ren and Kylo Ren will become a ghost and be like just nagging him the entire time.
Certainly walk the line, because they could say, oh, it's, you know, symmetry. Yeah, or the secular thing of the George Lucas, but they got knocked so hard for Force Awakens. I mean, people liked it, but then they were like, but it's pretty much A New Hope, that they might avoid that, where it might have been in the original plan, in the original script. And then Mark Hamill gets a heads up and it's like, yeah, you're not going to be a Force ghost in the third movie. We're either going to kill you or you're going
to
be there.
Well, that would be nice to see him actually continue, because, you know, we've lost Carrie Fisher, we've lost the Han Solo character. So most likely they're going to, you know, Carrie Fisher, or Princess Leia, is going to have to exit somehow. They're going to have to give her some way to be gone before the next episode. But it would be interesting to put him in a role where, you know, like Obi-Wan or whatever, he kind of peripheral character, but not dead.
Yeah. Now, here's my adventure theory about The Last Jedi. And it gets into the plural thing. And it's assembling the Last Jedi. So, Snoke?
Snoke's
kind of appears out of nowhere. And we all think that he's Sith or a Force user. Also, they're dropping in both in Rogue One and in A Force Awakens, people who are Force sensitive, not necessarily Jedi. Maybe they're going to collect those people. And then train them so they build a Jedi Force up. And it's really, you know, forget the balance. It's got to be 2 versus 2. It's, no, we're going to build up the old Jedi Order. So we're going to gather the last Jedi to build.
Well, so as far as other Jedi, is there anybody interesting that you'd like to see? I mean, do you think they'll actually make an animated character show up in...
Jedi now.
Yeah, Jar Jar's Sith.
That'd be so awesome. It'd be... And then we find out that that was in the contract for Disney. It was like, here's your... They originally offered $5 billion, and George is like, how about $4 billion? Yeah. And this happens. And then they're like, all right, well, it's $1 billion. What are you going to save $1 billion? There's your last Jedi.
Ouch.
I guess I'm looking forward to it. Last Jedi. We'll have to wait and see, man. Well, speaking of Star Wars, we all saw a movie recently.
Yeah, we saw Rogue One a little bit later than a lot of people. We saw it in January, although it was released about the same time or the exact same time in Japan. So we saw Rogue One. So what we're going to do is talk about Rogue One and not only our review of the movie, but just some questions at the end. So what were your expectations going in? And we, at the beginning of the episode, we have something where obviously what we were told in the trailer is a little bit different than what we saw.
Right.
Like the line from Saw Gerrera or Forrest Whitaker, which is a pretty cool line.
Yeah.
So we lost that. And on the other hand, we lost, it's a rebellion, I'll rebel.
Yes.
All right. So it's a trade-off.
I guess, yeah. They seem to make a lot of changes. Everyone talks about these changes. And let's talk about the trailer first. When I first saw the trailer, I was both excited and a bit skeptical. I mean, I was excited because I saw familiar things from the original trilogy. I saw what looked like AT-ATs, like walking on this shore. I saw like the classic Stormtrooper armor. But I also saw a lot of devices. Like, for example, that siren that you heard, the siren going off, which seemed to be imitating Prometheus trailer with the alarm, which was imitating the original Alien trailer. It was cool. It was really cool, but it's like a device that works, that brings you in. And then it also did the whole single note piano nostalgic Star Wars song. Do, 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 which Ghostbusters also used, which Jurassic World also used. Do, 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 do.
Right.
So it's really using a lot of these tricks to like grab us. Mm-hmm. We know what you like, what you love, what you saw as a child.
I forced my expectation as low as possible because I just wanted to see something new. And I was worried that there would, you know, the fan service of The Force Awakens, it was a little excessive. So I was hoping it wouldn't be that and we'd see a lot of new ideas and kind of new thinking in that world. And of course, it definitely looked darker and it looked less high adventure and more like a war movie. But I had no idea, you know, how that was actually gonna turn out. But the way that first trailer suggested a lot of things that the movie didn't give you. And there were some nice visuals and things that we never saw. So that was a little frustrating because there were things that I was looking for, or ideas that I got about maybe the main character's conflict or something happening that never materialized, that just, you know, just wasn't there. It possibly was there in a previous version or in previous scenes, but we never got any suggestion of that. So it kept the story wasn't as complicated and there wasn't as much of a conflict as I thought there would be.
Yeah, I certainly thought there would be a more complicated story and there'd be something where she's going to get captured and tortured and maybe she's going to go deep cover or infiltrate.
Mm-hmm.
So thinking more of a spy adventure as opposed to the straight up military adventure.
Yeah, I guess I originally thought that she was a bad guy masquerading as a rebel of sorts.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I thought she was an imperial person that they bring over and then she becomes a double agent.
The accent then, basically.
Yeah, I mean, she's got the British accent, the uniform that she had.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if I had any apprehensions, it would have come from A Force Awakens. Like you said, there was just too much fan service. So going in, but I was looking forward to it. What were your impressions when we first walked out of the movie?
And this was the first Star Wars movie for me that I kind of disengaged a little bit from. I kind of like I wasn't just glued to the screen the whole time. I kind of stepped back and had a moment where I'm like, am I still into this? There was certain times when they were kind of moving on to the next, you know, we're going to go get the plans now. I'm just like, do I really care? And I never felt that before in a Star Wars movie. Always, you know, it was in the original trilogy, we were very engaged in what they were doing and excited. Now they're onto this. Now the next, you know, the next adventure. That was the first time I ever noticed. I'm like, do I care?
Well, I think there was some really cool stuff in it, but I definitely get what you're talking about. I actually felt that towards the most exciting part, which was the climax and the ending. And yeah, sure, we get a really big epic space battle, which is great. You know, people love mm-hmm. that. But the battle on the ground was just less exciting for me because it was basically like we had to do X and it was very simple. Mm-hmm. Then get this hard drive. Oh, I mean, like, you know, it's not a simple task and I liked seeing him sneak in there, but it just felt like such a nuisance. Like, you know, every time they use a lot of traps where it's just like, we gotta get it. Oh, it's not coming out. The thing's jammed. We gotta climb in there. And then, oh no, these guys are coming after us. We gotta climb up the thing. And
oh no, he falls down. Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, the reason I had a problem with that is just because it's a lot of action, yes, but it holds no information whatsoever. And when it comes to like replayability, like I guess it's nice, but it's not as interesting.
I liked it more than A Force Awakens when I came out, and I still have that opinion. I thought there was a lot of fan service. I just thought it was better integrated. You know, when you watch a movie like that, you want to be, you know, strap in for a roller coaster ride. But there were moments, yeah, that took me out. And towards the end, I thought the action sequence was too long, and I was just like, oh, enough already. We know what's going to happen, but you've got to pace it so that the audience still feels tense, mm-hmm. that they could get caught. And I think they did that at the beginning of the action sequence pretty well, the pacing, but then it went on for so long. You're like, we know that the plans get out. Just kill everybody off or do what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe the only surprise was that everybody died, but even that wasn't so much of a surprise because you don't see those people again in the other movies. So, but I did like it. I thought the visuals were really good. I really liked that they went to exotic locales and they kind of captured that part not only the original trilogy, but the prequels, where they went to planets that were actually visually very interesting. There were a couple moments that I did genuinely laugh out loud. One was when Chirrut makes the blind joke, you know, when they put the blindfold over them. Or the other one was when K2SO... He's talking about the odds of her killing him. They're high. Very high. And I thought those were well done. Yeah. To be honest, I wasn't really, unlike A Force Awakens, which I didn't like as much. I thought the leads were a lot more compelling in A Force Awakens, mm-hmm. in Rey, Finn, and Kylo Ren. And here, I thought the background characters were the ones that were keeping me going through the movie. Mm-hmm. Where Jin and Cassian... Yeah. I think one of... maybe not none of us, but somebody else that we went to the film with, they complained about them kissing at the end. And I thought it had been established enough mm-hmm. for that type of movie. Also, you know, the world's going to end. You're with an attractive woman or attractive man.
Right.
What are you going to do? Just like, I'm going to sit here and weep for the last minute.
You get some different flavor. The rebels are a much more ragtag, much more, you know, diverse group, and basically terrorists. You know, we saw them, you know, when we saw them in that scene attacking the Kyber crystal shipment.
Yeah.
That looked like terrorism. It didn't, you know, so so we were so on the rebels' side and they are the good guys. And now we're like, okay, so.
Well, they've shown the dark, yeah.
There is a dark side and there's there's a lot of casualties involved in you know, in what they're doing.
Well, also, yeah. Isn't that like a different sect of the rebels, though? Like, you know, I thought Saw Gerrera's men.
Well, there was Saw Gerrera's men who did the very straight out of Syria or straight out of Iraq scene. You know, something that Catherine Bigelow. That would be Saw Gerrera's men who were too edgy or too extreme. Right. Except they did the same thing that the other rebels did,
right. And they had morals too. But they put you in cages,
right? Whereas Cassian just shoots down a guy because he's like, oh, I got to get back. I'm like, oh,
ah. Yeah, so that part of it was a little difficult. The them showing conflict within the rebellion and different sects and different extremism in the rebels and kind of infighting. And that was, we didn't have any idea that there was people like, yeah, I'm not going to do this. I'm out of your rebellion.
Yeah, to be honest, I don't think Star Wars is really the vehicle to show kind of conflict within a sect. Mm-hmm. It has to be more black and white. And like in A Force Awakens, they had like, you have a rebellion and you have a resistance and you have the New Order. And there is some sort of detente between the New Order and the rebellion, I guess. And the resistance is kind of like not And as I said in that review, that's too complicated for Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And here you go, you have a rebellion, but you have an extremist group. You're not going to have enough time to remotely explain why they're going to be too extreme.
Right.
So why have it? It was just like, go to Saw Gerrera. He's like right in there being rebel-y. So we have trouble accessing him. Just so you got to sneak in.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, well, I don't know, maybe he's going to listen to you.
Mm.
I don't know. It seemed like they were kind of forcing a connection there.
The tone of Rogue One and what it made me think of is when we were very Star Wars hungry and there was Dark Horse Comics doing Star Wars universe, you know, limited story runs.
Yeah.
And exploring that universe with smaller characters. And the writing in those characters, it was interesting in that it seemed to have that kind of freedom. And of course, the comics were not written for children. So it was written for an older audience. And that's the feeling that I had very much is...
That's a good comparison. Yeah. All right, well, let's divide it between what you liked about it.
I really like that they threw in the Kyber crystals in Rogue One as well. You know, since they're like doing a lot of mining and digging all these Kyber crystals for like their Death Star and for all their weapons and stuff like that, you know, that came back to theories about what's the biggest one from Force Awakens, the Star Killer. A lot of people have been theorizing that that's actually the place where they went and got their Kyber crystals in the Clone Wars, and they've just been mining it, digging into it, and that's why it's like half a planet, and they just kind of built their weapon there.
Interesting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Which kind of seems cool.
Mm-hmm.
I think that sounds very interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
I guess, but it gets back to how cool is it if you watch the movie and you don't get that?
Yeah.
And you get distracted by, or they just destroyed five planets? What? Yeah. They're all next to each other? What?
Yeah, I don't want this to be a big tangent, but that's something that is a little odd is I don't like peripheral detail. I mean, I understand like, you know, liking the different medias to link and like especially like the animated series and things to have common characters, but things that don't make sense, if it doesn't stand on its own, that's a little bit frustrating where something happens, you're like, why are they doing this? What is that? And you're like, well, if you would have read.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If there's an if.
Yeah, that's, you know, then... that's very frustrating. And that's a new thing. Just like I'm complaining about the names, I think that's a newer thing to Star Wars. It's making it more complicated because it is being embraced by a new generation and an internet generation. Yeah. So they can dig in. And that's part of the fun, I think, for younger fans is that they can just...
Or some older fans.
Not older fans. But they can just immerse themselves in the lore and enjoy that.
Well, that's like a new way in which we like partake upon new media of sorts, you know. That's definitely a new thing, and I think something like that started with The Matrix when it came out with like the Animatrix and The Matrix video game, which all kind of tied in.
Yeah,
I got a lot of people complaining where it's like, I don't want to watch the anime, I just want to watch the movies. And I'm like, I get you, you know.
Does
I understand
that mean,
but
did I say that? You may
have. Is that my Jeremy voice? Actually, with things like the Animatrix and the Matrix series, I think that's kind of when this new form of consumption of media really started to take off, and I think it only grown since then. And something with Star Wars is no longer just a trilogy of movies. It's more of it's an experience. It's something that you do, you immerse yourself into, and something that's going to be going, supposedly, theoretically, past our lifetime. And it'd be really interesting to see how younger generations will pick up on it and kind of immerse themselves into it. And will they stick to a certain part of Star Wars, or will they want to look into all of it, or what?
I'm surprised very young people consume media so differently, and they know about things because it was referenced in something that referenced something else. So they've got like a third generation, but they're familiar with it. So that'll be very interesting once you have all of this detail in a universe like Star Wars, what people will learn from that and what they will know about it. It's very daunting now, especially if someone has seen Force Awakens. Okay, let's go back and watch A New Hope. And God, this is slow and boring, and that's so fake. And, you know, that I felt very much after this, you know, new generation of movies, why George Lucas wanted to make the special editions, because he felt the aging of his masterpieces. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've got to go back and keep these relevant, keep these current, put some CG in them. And that's definitely a concern, but it's nothing you can really do much about. You're just going to have to let the culture forget about you, or, you know, continue to be interested as they will.
Yeah, but he re-released them. They made the special editions made a huge impact when they were re-released and came out in theaters again, you know? And,
there was no Star Wars presence at that time. Maybe Droids was on or whatever.
The THX versions just were re-released on VHS.
Oh, right. Yeah, they had a lot of home video releases. So I remember the laser discs and there were so many releases once they were out of the theaters and not in drive-ins or anything, which Star Wars stayed in theaters and kept coming back for summer releases in the early 80s, like crazy, you know, because they were still releasing movies and it just,
Yeah, but after Jedi, it did peter out and the special editions did revive it and sparked enough interest that you could have what we have now. Right. But that's an interesting point about there being so many movies that it can be daunting and it could almost be like comic books. And we're looking at DC just did Rebirth, and I know Marvel came out with the Ultimates about 10 years ago or so because they realize if something's like issue 400, people feel that they can't jump in and understand the story. Even jumping into Rebirth, I mean, there's points where you're like, well, I don't really understand what they're talking about because I didn't read all of that. And Star Wars could get so big that people won't be able to follow it or have trouble following it unless they jump in at a previous point, or they might have to make the trilogies very much standalone after they finish episode 9.
Right.
Make them very standalone where you can start at the first movie in this trilogy and you'll be able to follow along. You don't need to know about Han, Luke and that because we take for granted that people know that because we're about that age, but they want to make Star Wars relevant to the younger people. And when I go to the toy store here in Japan is different than North America. I see kids in the Star Wars section because their dad is in there.
Right.
Not because they wanted to be there. They want to go and look at other things. Maybe Lego Star Wars movies will help to introduce stuff to kids. Oh,
that's interesting. Yeah.
Maybe, you know, remaking stuff in a slightly different medium. Mm-hmm. Or not medium, maybe is the bad choice of words, but in a slightly different way. I wouldn't be surprised if we rebooted Star Wars. Mm. We get a new hope.
Yeah, that's interesting because I think that's the way, like, superhero characters have worked. Like, younger children don't read comic books, but they see Saturday morning cartoons with superheroes, and now they can see movies, you know, summer movies with superheroes, and that makes them interested in the comic books. So how those different media interact, I think, will be something, we'll see.
I like that Bail Organa was in it. Mm. I thought he was cool. It was really cool to see him reprise that role, even for just a moment. And he's like, hey, going off to Alderaan. See you guys later. Boom.
The choice of the setting in that smaller story was nice, and the feel of the movie was great. It's just what I wanted. There wasn't goofiness. They weren't trying to restart anything. They were just kind of putting you in that world and letting you see a different part of it, you know, with some familiar things, you know, technologies and characters and settings that made you feel comfortable. So I liked that. I liked that it was talking to a little bit older audience, so you didn't have to ignore.
They had a lot of good lines. It was humorous. Mm-hmm. Unlike A Force Awakens, the lines were fresher. Mm-hmm. They weren't recycling as much from the original trilogy.
Right.
So I did like that. I thought the characters were pretty appealing. There was just enough. It was almost like a Dirty Dozen type of movie where you give a very brief, these guys are at the monastery. They kind of are bumming around now. Done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then we see them do something and we go, okay, they can fight.
Yeah.
And then he's a rebel pilot. I'm not sure they gave him enough to do, but I thought the actor was so engaging that you liked seeing him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had his little, it was more like a role-playing game in a sense, where especially like a Dungeons and Dragons role-playing game where everybody's got their particular role.
Yes, yes.
So you got to get so everybody can shine for a little moment. So the pilot can tell them where to go. There's some panham fight scene so the blind guy can do something.
More like they kept failing their roles.
they kind of dragged things out, but it was satisfying in that you got to see them all do something.
Yeah, they were likable enough too that you wanted to see more. When we talk about things we really disliked, that was the thing I disliked, is that there was a big period at the end of this sentence, you know, we're not going to see any further adventures, and so that's
But in general, I think that the characters were all pretty positive role models. They were all very strong characters, and, you know, except for that one scene where he shoots the guy in the back, I guess. But for the most part, you know, you have teamwork, friendship, courage, self-sacrifice.
Yeah.
A lot of really good things going with these characters, and I think, you know, it's great to see that. Great to see that in a Star Wars movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And without that complication that they portrayed in the rebellion, it was nice to see the ragtag group of people doing something, because that was the feeling in A New Hope, is when they were the attack on the Death Star, which is like, this is our last chance to do this, and here's all the ships we can put together. And it had that feeling, if you, you know, kind of ignored the infighting and the little squabbling and mm-hmm. them having to go out on their own, that last mission was satisfying because of that, because it had that same feel of that's what you remember Rebels being, is, you know.
Yeah, absolutely, kind of, yeah.
Oh, and all the Red Leader and all that stuff, those are, that's old footage from the original
Star Wars. Right, right, yeah. Gold Leader, Red Leader, was it Dutch Vander is one of them?
Yeah, that was, the other one's name. That was very that interesting. Yeah,
they had female pilots.
Right, right.
That was good.
Yeah. That's good that they can make those links that give it a more updated flavor.
Yeah,
give New Hope and that setting a more updated flavor.
Absolutely. I mean, but they had some nice touches where it did feel like it was kind of set right before Episode mm-hmm. 4. The leads or the males had like the 70s haircuts.
Mm-hmm.
And that was appreciated. I like, as always, the costume design was great. Sound design was amazing. As I said before, planets seem exotic. I really like the big space battle at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Just visually interesting.
And we got a new type of stormtrooper, the shore trooper.
Definitely.
I love that about, that's just, you know, there's the ice trooper, the snow trooper.
Yeah.
There's biker scout, and there's now a beach scout. The shore trooper.
Death troopers?
Death troopers.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's right. Two new. Yeah, that's right.
Like the bodyguards, yeah.
Right.
Supposedly, the original design was like part of their head was removed, so they're kind of more obedient.
Oh.
So they were supposed to have like these smaller heads in the conceptual design, so kind of like they were lobotomized a bit.
Right, right.
And then somebody looked at that and said, that looks terrible. And it's like, well, how do I know why they have a small head?
Well, if you read the books.
And it's like, scrap that. We have enough of you read the book. Battle of Yavin.
Yeah, so we saw ion torpedoes. We saw the ion cannon in Empire, and now we saw the ion torpedoes, which take down a Star Destroyer.
Yeah, why don't you use more of them? Yeah.
That was, they ran out. That was it.
Yeah, that was it. Oh, the last three ion. Well, it was worth it. It was worth it. We agree it was worth it. Why don't we make more? I don't know. If you read the novels, you'll find out.
Not enough kyber crystals.
We killed the guy who was making artificial kyber crystals. I did think Darth Vader at the end, that was badass. I mean, that's pure fan service. I didn't squeal or anything when I saw it, but that was a good scene. You get to see Darth Vader do some damage.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know why he's so kind of laid back and coming in at the end of the attack in A New Hope, because he's exhausted.
I think there's been some criticism by other people that, oh, I didn't get enough characterization of these characters, and things kind of jumped at the beginning, and that's about the pace you need to go for this type of movie, because it's one of those, if you scratch it a little, scratch below the surface, it's pretty shallow.
Right.
It's not. So I thought, and they're probably like, why are we going to invest all this in these characters, which you're probably never going to see again?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, this is all you need. So I thought they did a good enough job.
It was.
I don't think the emotional beats really hit, like the speech, at the end when, the going into the suicide mission doesn't really deliver, but Cassian's speech of we've done things.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of speeches. There was a lot of speeches, wasn't there?
If we can move into don't likes, think the we've been there already, but I think my biggest don't like is that you are seeing contemporary Hollywood's problems in this movie. Like, you're seeing things like the composer is the generic composer everybody goes to. It wasn't John Williams.
No, he wasn't. This is I listened to this guy's interview. He was really cool. I like how he did Star Trek.
I didn't care for the music.
It was
he does all of Abrams films.
I could not
tell you anything about the music. When I say sound design, I don't mean the soundtrack. It was the worst soundtrack of all the movies.
Yeah, it definitely. Yeah.
It was bland.
Well, the thing is, I don't remember that soundtrack. You're right, but also I don't remember much from Force Awakens either.
I remember that Rey theme sticking out. When she's kind of sledding down the sand dune, I was like, wow, that's new. That feels very new because it was very sparse.
The writing was very contemporary, and in some cases, when you're looking at the, like Bodhi or Chirrut or even the droid, although I didn't think the droid was that much of a departure from C-3PO, that they're always trying to do the lines.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to be funny. And I think back to comics when you would have Spider-Man was the funny superhero. Mm-hmm. And then when you put him with the other ones, he was cracking jokes. The Thing was the funny superhero. Now you read a comic these days, everybody's a comedian.
Right.
And that's what Rogue One was like. Everybody's really funny. Even Darth Vader, don't choke on it. Yeah, and you're like, yeah. He had certain gravitas. And people knocked the prequels for the dialogue. But when you think about it, when you have people like Obi-Wan or Anakin Skywalker, they're kind of, they might have actually spoken in a very stilted way because they lead a pretty stilted life. Mm-hmm. But then you have somebody like Darth Vader, who's extremely dark and he didn't come to who he was in a very good way. And in a New Hope, Empire, Return of the Jedi is pretty serious dude. Mm-hmm. And he brings a lot of gravitas to all the scenes. And now he's like choking somebody and cracking wise. It just kind of pulls you out. Like,
yeah, definitely.
And I would say, even though I like the last scene of Darth Vader, I wish that was the only time he appeared.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we have to go to Mordor and see him there. Because that's one of the things that pulled me out of the movie. I'm like, why are we in Mordor?
Yeah, that was just kind of thrown in there. And he didn't need to go there.
And it was such a... Another thing I didn't like. I didn't like Krennic. Like, he's such a forgettable villain.
He was the David Warner of Star Wars, I guess.
How is he... He's an antagonist in a business movie or something like that. He's not in you might have put him in RoboCop maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some Machiavellian kind of villain, but not in this kind of movie.
Yeah, definitely.
And going to beg from Darth Vader
he's not even in
pointless.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Is he even a general?
Like Darth Vader, everybody knows who Darth Vader is. You could have All you needed to do was reference Darth Vader.
Right.
And imagine the buildup and the tension when Tarkin goes, Vader will deal with them. And then everybody's going, Vader's coming?
Yeah, right.
But
right.
You saw him in Mordor. So you're like, Vader's coming back?
That's true. Great. He's a pretty accessible guy. You just land on his planet and there's his weirdo guys introduce you and you get right in, you know?
Yeah, he has time for that. He's like, what does Critic want? Oh, he wants credit for the Death Star. I'm a Sith Lord. I don't have time for this. Like, what are the flunkies doing? I like to see a scene with Darth Vader going, that's your job. All the flunkies dead because Credit got through. That's what I would have liked to see.
Yeah, one's worried about ending up in that lava on the planet for even bothering him. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, it's like, memories. It brings back good memories of when I got cut down to pieces by my mentor. Yeah.
And I don't think they've written Darth Vader well since Anakin was put in the suit in episode 3.
Oh.
I mean, just like, you know, what he said just was wacky. And now we haven't heard, we've heard James Earl Jones do lines that he would never have said, you know, in the original trilogy. So it's not menacing and it's not, he's not driven and simple.
Yeah.
It's very odd. I think they really diluted that character. And I think because they're trying to characterize him instead of a dark knight or an evil, you know, an evil warrior as a monster. Like he's a universal monster with Frankenstein and the werewolf.
Well, I think they're worried about him having him sound old fashioned, and that's back what you're saying. It's like they want to make everything contemporary, and contemporary is there's conflict.
Right.
You know, but what is he going to complain about? This is over budget. Yeah. Right. This death weapon that will destroy a planet is over budget. We didn't authorize this. Who authorized that?
He looks at sales reports.
The overhead. Look at this overhead. Outrageous.
Well, I mean, you know. Actually, I wouldn't have minded seeing Tarkin and Vader in the same room together. You know,
except another thing I didn't like. I didn't like Peter Cushing because there was a bit of Uncanny Valley in there.
Uncanny Cushing.
Uncanny Cushing.
Yeah,
I'm more than happy for the Cushing family to get theirs and get some money. Don't get me wrong, but it could have been done a different way where he wasn't in there a little. He was in that movie a lot.
Yeah.
So the fact that it wasn't perfect, when you go back and you look at all the work that they do what they did, it's very, very impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very impressive. And I think it's one of the most expensive special effects ever.
Wow.
Yeah.
So is that's still ILM? That's still...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they have
the guy who... The guy in charge of it was the guy who came up with the Rogue One concept.
Yeah, the Photoshop guy.
Yeah,
the brothers that created Photoshop.
Yeah, genius.
Yeah, so, but that's, Yeah, that showing off, and I think that was a problem with the prequel trilogy for me as well, is they did things because, look what we can do now, you know? Yeah. See how shiny the ship is? Do you believe how shiny the ship is? Like
oh, but that ship was so shiny!
Yeah, people thought it added menace to Tarkin, mm-hmm. but he just petty, and I don't know, that clash I didn't need to see. Yeah. And it could have all been summed up in, because they have the grainy hologram technology,
right.
as you could have had... Here's the Cushion family getting a little money because mm-hmm. we're just going to have him in as a grainy hologram. He would have looked perfect.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
You do it. You still get the actor, what was his name, Guy Henry, who apparently did his lines. Mm-hmm. And he could have done a couple lines.
All of his gestures and everything like that.
Yeah, he could have gone like in the grainy hologram, one little scene, you know, you are a disappointment, destroy the planet, maybe watch it from the hologram. Oh, okay, I'm taking over. What?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but I didn't even need to see that because did you need to know why Tarkin takes over the Death Star when the other guy dies?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, people are going to go, well, why is he in there? Because he's the Grand Moff.
Right.
And the other guy's dead. Like, but why him? So oh. that took me out of the movie. Mordor mm-hmm. and Grand Moff Tarkin mm-hmm. getting more lines than probably most of the Rebel Alliance really took me out of that movie.
Do you really think this whole bringing back old actors and CG is going to become a bigger thing these days? I mean...
I hope not. Yeah, I don't think there's a need. And it's interesting because it's like you're going to put a virtual character in a role that could be filled by an actor that could then continue that character in you know, sequels.
Yeah.
And so you're eliminating, you know, this whole new generation of actors. Sorry, we've got virtual last generation still in these roles. We don't need you.
Well, the characters in Star Wars are just so the actor that plays them that if you replace the actor, it does take a little bit away from the character, don't you think? Like,
yeah.
I mean, some people might disagree, but I don't know. Like, even to the point where if you had someone else play the role of Princess Leia in that movie, it wouldn't be Princess Leia.
Right, yeah, and you may not have even understood. They would have had to say, hello, Princess Leia. Like, you wouldn't have known who that was supposed to be, even if she was dressed exactly like Carrie Fisher in the A New Hope. You already touched on this, but what did you think about everybody had to die, sabotaging any concern or anything you had for any of these characters or any hope that you wanted to see them do something again? It's just everybody had to have a death scene. And in that last battle, it became pretty, you know, boom, 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 boom. It became like a Vietnam movie where you were seeing everybody.
Yeah, I think the Churik's death scene and when Bay's coming up, I thought that was okay. Like, I think it had the impact that they were going for. I think Bodhi was why... like a grenade, and he goes, thank you, Galen. I'm like, why are you thanking him? You really haven't established anything. Right. And I actually like the way he played that character. So I was like, I could definitely see him again. Like, I probably liked Bodhi more than any of the new characters introduced. Yeah.
I get really concerned. So, you know, Forrest Whitaker's character, Saw Gerrera says, you know, you will probably lose your mind from me doing this truth.
He said probably, he didn't say yeah, definitely.
But there was nothing, but he was fine.
Yeah, he was a little loopy, though.
Yeah, well, where am I? Oh, okay, now I'm back. Yeah. So that was a little odd, because that was pretty serious jeopardy for that character.
Yeah.
And when they saw him in the cell next to, I was like, oh, he's a vegetable, he's gone. And then, oh, no, he's flying the ship, and he's going to say Rogue One.
Yeah, they gave him the big line, Rogue One, yeah. That would have been funny, like they're reading it off of something, but then, like, why are you going to have Rogue written somewhere?
Right.
Yeah. Or he's like, oh, that's Rouge. Rouge One. Wait a minute, we're Rouge One. No, you said Rogue One. So what was the point of that system where they're like, oh, we don't recognize you. Well, too bad. Bye. Trying to stop us. I went to the bathroom during the Rebel conflict scene where they're like,
that was a good choice. Yeah.
I thought nothing's going to come of this. Yeah. And it seemed like you guys didn't seem too happy with that scene where there was kind of pointless, oh, do we trust her? Mm-hmm. And again, it's not that kind of movie to have that kind of conflict or have a little speech.
And it reminded me so much of the Matrix sequels where they portray the surviving human world as, you know, it's a beautiful place because it's the last place people are alive. And all they do is infighting and complain and love triangles. And it's just so unnecessarily,
that's real life.
So unnecessarily ugly that you just, you know, why are we here? And so, you know, you got such a different feeling of what the rebellion was and how barely held together it was. And that was kind of uncomfortable. I mean, it's a modern update. And of course, as more adult viewers, we can understand that. But why? You know?
Yeah, especially you're never going to revisit that.
Yeah, right.
I mean, well, maybe in these side movies, other Star Wars stories, you're going to revisit that. But yeah, it certainly didn't leave me wanting more. Mm-hmm. Boy, I want more political intrigue where the stakes are planets are getting destroyed. But do we really want to oppose that?
Right.
Yeah. Do we really trust her? I mean, it's really, we have no choice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. End of discussion. Mm-hmm. It's going to be. And then really the conflict, if you will, is convincing them to go on the suicide mission.
Yeah, right.
Or something. And some people will just stand up. And I think, for example, Guardians of the Galaxy, in a much shorter scene, did it much better where,
yeah, definitely.
You know, they're like, well, we're all going to die. And then one person stands up and like,
yeah,
that's what we're here to do, you know. And everybody's like, you know, that's right.
Yeah, I would have liked that because it would have prepared me a little bit better for, they did, with her speech and everything, say, you know, we're just going to kind of pass the baton until the last of us is dead. But yeah, if it would have been a more desperate, we know we're going to die, and it been a bit more solemn instead of, you know, rah, rah.
How about the weak-ass Star Destroyers?
Where
and what's with those tactics of put the Star Destroyer, where are we going to put the other one? Right next to it.
You know, we put them all together, we'll make a pizza.
Yeah, I was like, what's the range on the weapons that they have to like get really close to each other?
Well, I think they were like kind of just focusing around the ring, you know, the entrance to get in there.
And it's like, get the Hammerhead Corvette to push it. Just and push then
them together? Yeah.
Easily slice through the other Star Destroyer.
I think they probably had the idea, we want to see, you know, we can do this and we want to see Star Destroyers crash into each other. And then they didn't think of, okay, well, so how are we going to actually in the story get to this point? Because
I just thought, okay, that's pretty cool. Didn't pull me out.
right.
But when, it was one of those things, as soon as you walk out of the theater, you're like, hold on. How sharp are these Star Destroyers? It's like, cut through.
I mean, it was cool because, like, you know, when you see a crash like that, you think of like Star Trek Nemesis, you think of Starship Troopers.
I thought of Return of the Jedi, but
right.
When it crashes into the Death Star,
kind of the same thing. It's like, we got another Star Destroyer. What are we going to get to? Oh, you're going to just
they didn't crash into each other, did they?
No, the Super Star Destroyer crashes into
the Death Star.
Death Star.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it just goes. Fire
right, but out. That's what it reminded me of, because what they did is they got what the one Star Destroyer pushes the other Star Destroyer into the ring. When I watched it, though, I thought it was pretty cool. Mission accomplished. It was you got your cool scene, and it kind of reminds me of like Ridley Scott, where he's got that, I'm gonna say windshield, but you know, the glass on the spaceship and smoke's coming to show movement. And somebody complained, there's no smoke in space.
Right.
And Ridley Scott said, there is now, mate. Because you know, he's just thinking, this is the shot we need.
Right.
You know, it's going to make it look better. And you do that and you're like, yeah, it's going to make it look better.
I don't mean to go on this about this a little bit more, but you know, that was a big dramatic space battle, which people say that we really haven't seen a nice space battle like that in a long time. Because, you know, we didn't really even get one in Force Awakens. But
got one in Revenge of the Sith.
Revenge of the Sith, the opening, that was. But you know what I reflect upon, and you said you didn't really like it, but was that epic space battle at the end of Phantom Menace, where you have them fighting in space, you have them the Gungans fighting, and then you have them like trying to do their little espionage, getting back into the capital, you know, with their grappling hooks, and then. Mm-hmm. There was one other battle happening at the same time, wasn't there? Obi-Wan and Darth Maul and Qui-Gon Jinn all fighting. And it was like, that was epic, man. and the thing is, everything had a purpose, though. You kind of, I mean, like, the stuff them trying to get into the Capitol was a little weird, but I think everything kind of served a purpose, and it was all very compelling. Mm-hmm. And I think this was kind of lacking that a little bit.
It's a good point in that, you know, you might knock the Phantom Menace, that final thing is being maybe too confusing or too much. But yeah, everything did have a purpose. You had the Sith battle. You had Anakin destroying the Federation ship. You had the bat holding off the droid army. So yeah, there were real functions. Whereas whereas Rogue One ends with like real micro actions. Kind of separated just so people have something to do. It was like, I can't send the signal, but I got to send the signal before I do that. Bodhi's got to let them know and mm-hmm. send a message.
And somebody's got to
flip
the switch.
Split the switch. So
yeah,
kind of reduces that.
Yeah, definitely. That's true. And that was, I think I remember that being a very signature Star Wars thing, is that simultaneous, you know, conflict. There's two things you're jumping back between, you know, the battle on Endor, the battle above Endor, mm-hmm. you know, yeah, kind mm-hmm. of, you know, doing that parallel battle or action scenes.
Yeah. Probably a Phantom Menace got knocked because they really liked the lightsaber battle.
Mm.
And then the other things were Jar Jar Binks fighting the droids and Anakin, who people didn't like, being a superhero. So it wasn't so much the plan
mm-hmm.
or even the execution as so much as they didn't like two of the characters in two of the pivotal scenes.
Right.
Two of the pivotal roles.
Yeah, but that Gungan versus droid's actually pretty cool when you look at it. And the shields go down and it's just like,
okay.
It's just start shooting each other.
But then when you have Jar Jar Binks with he's got like a piece of droid stuck on him and he's like shooting all these droids trying to shake it off.
All right? It's like, the force is strong within him, man.
I can see both sides.
All right.
So we already answered with the CG question about mm-hmm. whether or not we liked it or didn't like it. I'm in the didn't like it
mm-hmm.
Boat. You seem to be a bit concerned of what they can do with it.
Yeah, and I don't think it does take you out of the movie, and they're just doing it because they can and they want to be impressive.
Well, at this stage, I mean, not many people can. I don't even think they could.
Yeah,
judging by, or they could do it like very. I think Princess Leia wasn't in it enough where you get. You really scrutinize her face,
mm-hmm.
but once you put him in as much as Peter Cushing was in there, mm-hmm. like Tarkin was in there, and because he's older, his face has got more character, we'll say.
Right.
So I think it would be harder to replicate. So it was a very expensive to do that you would probably just hire somebody. I mean, they had to hire an actor anyway.
Yeah, right.
Plus then all the CG. So it just seems like a very expensive thing.
That was one thing that surprised me, I think, the most about Rogue One is I didn't think it had that budget. Like, I thought it was going to be a very small, much lower budget. Yeah, much lower budget. And it just, the end of that, like, how are they paying for all of this?
But the thing is, with Princess Leia, anyway, Carrie Fisher was still alive and saw that and liked it. And then she died shortly afterwards. And you're just like, you know, you can't help but think this, like, this is now a dead actor playing the same role. But it wasn't. She was still alive at that time.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things barely. That she said about...
she died right afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Not long afterwards.
But I just remember her saying something that she didn't really... She's like, she's getting older. And she says, like, one of the hardest things about doing Force Awakens is that you're getting older and you can see this. And then they preserve it in HD and they project it really big on the side of a wall. And yeah, you're reminded of it constantly. So I'm just like, when she sees like a younger version of herself reprising that role, playing an homage to her.
Yeah.
You know, I think that people can really appreciate something like
she
that.
She also had
know?
Decades to get used to not having the rights to her image. Mm. She made a joke. What did she have? She had a funny joke where she says, I have to pay George Lucas every time I look in the mirror.
Right.
Yeah. So she's had time to get used to it. I don't know if other people would. I bet you contracts now the image rights, because they would have it for merchandising and that. Like, mm-hmm. they can use your image to make action figures and that, and perhaps even to do animated movies or video games.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, like Ewan McGregor probably had in his contract, probably maybe got a little bit off of Clone Wars, because they did a pretty good job of replicating him.
Yeah.
Hayden Christensen, not so much, but...
Going back to that, it's interesting because now there is so much multimedia video games and TV series and everything. And that was a difficulty with Mark Hamill. He had a falling out with LucasArts and made his asking rate for him to do voices in video games insane. Like, I want $1 million. So they stopped using him, and that's when they started to go to soundalikes. So that's probably something they're trying to cover their, Disney's trying to cover their behinds on. We want to be able to get you to do voices for a game or do something for a mobile app or something, and not have to worry that you're going to, you know, be able to fight us on
this. They might just go with soundalikes anyway, because voice actors are probably more available.
Yeah, that's true too.
Somebody I'm not saying Mark Hamill made it big, but if you had like Harrison Ford, even if you had him on a contract, there'd be so many scheduling issues that they would just try to get somebody. Clone Wars, again, I think Ewan McGregor's voice actor is pretty decent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The guy plays Obi-Wan. Yeah. And I think the Anakin Skywalker voice actor is really good as well, but he doesn't sound as much like Hayden Christensen as the Ewan McGregor mm-hmm. sounds like. This was a PG-13 movie. We know people that took their fairly young kids to see it. By their reports, their kids did say they liked it, but do you think this is a kid's movie? Like, you were talking earlier that it seemed to appeal more to older people, but do you think this was appropriate for kids?
I don't know. I mean, it reminded me, especially the war scenes, the fighting on the beach at the end, mm-hmm. and the attack on the Kyber Crystal shipment earlier, it had a war movie feel. And so if you were watching, you know, Platoon or something on the TV edit, you know, yeah. where they took all the blood and guts out, it had the same kind of tone where there were people screaming and there's like a child that needed to be rescued and innocent bystanders running for their lives and, you know, a lot of gunfire and explosions. I think the people throwing grenades and you seeing, you know, bodies flying. I mean, they've done that in Star Wars, but this was a little grittier. And mm-hmm. I don't know. I think they're definitely moving. They moved away from that. I think mm-hmm. a kid might be bored, but, you know, modern kids are... they're intaking a lot more sophisticated media now than yeah. we were back in the 70s and 80s. So I think that may have changed. But just from my judgment, the tone and how the story was told was just not very kid-friendly.
No, I didn't think so either.
Well, as I said, like, I know some kids that went to see it. My brother took his daughter to see it. She's about 4.5, almost 5. Mm-hmm. Pretty young. And she loved it.
Wow,
she yeah. absolutely loved it.
What'd she love about it?
She liked the story. She liked the characters. She was really into
octopus.
Yeah, totally. No, she really likes. She's into Star Wars. She likes watching Lord of the Rings movies. Right. You know, but she's pretty mature for her being a 4.5-year-old. She can accept a lot of things, and she knows the difference between fiction and reality. And also, my brother, like, you know, I even thought there's no blood in this movie. There was blood in Force Awakens. You know, people get shot. They just get a little char and they fall over. There's like peppering. It's sci-fi violence still, although it does look like a war zone. Mm-hmm. People might say that you'll see worse things just by flipping through the channels, by seeing the news even come on TV.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but for the most part, you're right. It is PG-13, so it's definitely strongly suggested that parents kind of preview the material before showing it to children, because, you know, some children might not be able to handle it. But I think, you know, if a child is into Star Wars, if they've seen the other Star Wars movies, there's definitely a lot of positive role models. There's a lot of positive things going on in this movie besides just the war zones.
Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't mind if a Star Wars story meant more mature story universe. Yeah.
And it seems to be that's what they were going for. And I think that might be...
No, well, almost wanted to turn my child away.
Well, you said that the Clone Wars changed in tone from the beginning.
It gets pretty dark, yeah.
And I'm wondering, is there something characters. That's purely for kids? Can you people knock something as, oh, that's too kiddie. Mm-hmm. But then how gritty can you make it? And I think maybe there wasn't blood, but the images were like reminiscent of Iraq terrorism. And sure, maybe some kids can handle that.
But again, that's the world the kids are growing up in these days, you know?
No, the kids aren't growing up on the streets of Iraq. I mean, maybe in Iraq they are growing up on the streets in Iraq.
It's like the things that are being displayed to them, you know, every day.
Do they really watch that? I mean, what's being displayed to them now? They're being displayed Trump and the inauguration and how many people showed up. Maybe that's what they're looking at. I don't know what kids look at. I mean, they can access everything. It doesn't mean they're going to be, oh geez, I wonder what's going on in Damascus right now.
You know, bombings everywhere in the world, you know, Syrian refugees and stuff.
Sure, but is that what kids are watching, really? I mean, you could say that it's out there, but yeah, the tone is like a war movie. Kind of the complexity, the unnecessary complexity of certain things. Kids going to be really into this Krennic and Tarkin standoff,
he wants credit for this weapon.
That's so frustrating. In class, we did a project, and really, I did all the coloring, but Sam said he took the picture. That's my life.
If your kid can sit down through and watch a feature-length movie, then maybe you might consider it.
It's interesting you said that your niece could see like the Lord of the Rings, because there's some like very just the, you know, orc faces.
Oh,
and
yeah,
things.
There's some
that's
gross stuff.
That's pretty strong, yeah. Yeah. And it's a pretty, so I definitely think it depends on the kid, but I think as far as like enjoying the story, no kid is going to enjoy those details. They're just going to wake up for the action.
Like a little girl sees Jin and really looks up to this heroine protagonist and the things that she does. And I think that's what they look into. They look into, they see that character.
But did you see how tiny she was? Did they make Imperial uniforms even that small? So this little tiny Imperial technician in that little slot she was looking through? It was adorable, but I just don't think that exists. Isn't there a height requirement?
Hey, they could have had a fan service line as, you're pretty short to be not a stormtrooper or whatever you are.
A data technician.
Oh, I'm here to... No, I'm not here to rescue you. I'm here to grab some data.
Yeah, some of the war scenes, like, there's a lot of dirt flying everywhere and there's guns flying and people just flying everywhere. But I think nothing was really graphically depicted.
Well, I don't think things have to be so graphically depicted. Like, you don't need to see mutilation or limbs flying, but there were people dying and there were bombs going
it's
just, off.
It's like masses. It's not like specific people. And like, you know, those characters eventually die at the end, but it's like very elegantly portrayed.
Like a grenade thrown in. The elegance, the beauty.
We don't know if he's dead or not. Maybe he just rolled out of the way and got in another ship and flew away, man. Yeah, I think he's still out there somewhere.
Thank you, Galen, for telling me about the escape hatch in this ship.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
Those all of the weak
Thank
spots.
You, Galen, for teaching me.
I just want to know where Jin got the stormtrooper toy, the kind of country cracker barrel stormtrooper toy.
Why would they have that? I thought he hated the Empire and it was like, really but I want my stormtrooper toy.
Well,
all right.
She used to live in Coruscant, like, you know, according to those flashbacks. Where she got it.
That was really odd. Yeah. It was a very odd detail. I mean, it could have been anything that
would have to be something that we would recognize.
Wasn't it Yoda? Yoda is much more popular than Stormtrooper.
It would be nice if they could make movies that were geared for kids, clearly geared for kids, and they could make movies that were geared towards adults. Mm-hmm. But they might be trying to, even in this experiment of Rogue One, of a war movie. I know people say that wars is in the title, right? But a genuine war movie that they could have gone with a darker tone. And just because Deadpool is a superhero movie doesn't mean you should take your kids.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, when parents did take their kids to an R-rated superhero movie and then complained, and Deadpool, they were very good with social media, saying, what did you expect?
And he even said in the beginning of the movie, get out of here.
Yeah. And then they could maybe do that with like Star Wars movies. But no, they're going to be like, everybody, please see this. Absolutely.
I think that's great. I think Star Wars should be for all ages. I think like even some of the
darker
stuff.
Make a movie like Rogue One.
But the thing is, it's not that dark. And I think like you're discrediting what like children can handle. I always tended to agree with, you know, Don Bluth. Kids want that challenge. They want to confront this dark. They want to confront this evil, as long as you wrap it up in a happy ending.
Oh, the happy ending where everybody died?
Princess Leia, hope.
Oh, it's a hope. Yeah,
yeah, but I think it's the concern isn't so much what children can handle, because that's very much an individual basis, but it's what the parents are going to freak out about. And
I think that's a lot to do with it. Yeah, and then when I was reading the guide about like rating systems, even PG, it's mostly geared towards what parents might find offensive for children.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like where the problem lies there. Maybe it would,
because I remember
like
leaving the theater after Empire Strikes Back in tears, and they didn't even kill Han Solo, but it was like, he's gonna be back, telling my parents, and they're like, yeah, he's gonna be back.
That's good storytelling. We should not deprive children of that.
But as far as these smaller films, these Star Wars stories, mm-hmm. it would be great if they differentiated themselves and they were in that universe. And if they're going to move into doing movies centered around individual characters that we already know, it would be nice to see darker, gambling Han Solo or
Lando.
You know, Lando. Yeah, you know, like them to be able to have that flexibility to tell stories of characters we knew as kids to our adult brains.
Right. Yeah. No, and I'd like to see Star Wars stories that don't focus on the main story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's completely independent. That'd be nice
to see.
I'm glad that Rogue One is a success and that we might see more of the Star Wars universe. All right, well, that ends our episode on The Last Jedi and Rogue One. Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Drive Through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive Through RPG, the one true source for RPGs.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.